What's up, everybody? My name is David EJ Berger. You can find me at Carl Jr. on Twitter. And welcome to Training Camp Dialed In.
Bum bada bum 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 bada bum bum bum. Man, it feels good. It just feels so good to be back, guys. August. It feels so far away and then it's here. It's like out of nowhere. Football is back. I mean, football is back. I don't know if you're walking around, you're thinking it's not back. But it is. I'm just here to tell you that it is. And guess what? Today, you're getting a podcast that is quintessential for your fantasy season. They talk about heavy hitters. We have one today. In fact, he's so big, I'm even cutting down on my usual pre-interview nonsense that I like to think people tune in for sometimes. Sometimes, occasionally. There's a few fans out there that want to hear my spiel, but I'm realistic. You'll want the fantasy in information. And today of all days, we got to get to it. We're talking about the Cincinnati Bengals today. We have to get to it, okay? Because as I told him in the interview, we've got some NFL reporting royalty here. I dialed up Ben Baby. He covers the Bengals for a little outfit called ESPN, the four letter. This is big time. You can find him at Ben_Baby on Twitter. And not only are we going to get the definitive guide to the 2022 Cincinnati Bengals, we're also going to get some insights on Ben's playlist. This is exciting stuff. Again, follow him at Ben_Baby. But what you really should do, go to ESPN.com, read his work. The guy is working hard out there for the football fans to know what's going on with their team, not just from a fantasy perspective, but to know what's going on in general. So go to ESPN.com, read his work. So what are we waiting for? Let's bring him on, ladies and gentlemen, Ben Baby.
There it is. How's it going?
Hey, Ben. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. Good, man. I'm excited to talk about this Bengals squad once again with you. Thank you so much. And, you know, a lot has happened since we last spoke. Last year, this team went to the Super Bowl, Ben. I don't know if you know that. I'm sure you do. Pretty amazing. What was that? What was that like? And was there like a moment during the season where you actually thought, hey, this might actually be a possibility?
I remember joking after, I think it was when they came out of the bye week, it felt like people were so reactionary on how, because the Bengals were kind of streaky in that year. I joked after they beat the Raiders in Vegas. I said, oh, you know, go ahead and book your Super Bowl tickets as a joke, because that seemed to be how the reaction kind of spun in Cincinnati. And then sure enough, after a few weeks, I was like, okay, they might be good, but really, I think it wasn't until the Kansas City game, once they clinched the AFC North, when I thought, okay, this team could be really good, for them to basically beat Kansas City in the manner they did, not get, you know, looked like they were about to get boat raced, and they ended up able to come back in the second half. And then, you know, for them to kind of beat Kansas City at their own game to a degree, and that, you know, going out airing it out as much as they did, not being afraid of kind of dropping back and passing the ball a lot. I thought that was interesting. Obviously, that offensive line could not hold up through the entirety of the postseason. But I think that was when you started to see that team could potentially be very good. But even looking back, I'm stunned that that team not only played for a Super Bowl, but arguably should have won the Super Bowl. I think that's kind of the most surprising thing, and it's still a lot for me to wrap my head around.
Well, I think it's a lot for everyone to wrap their heads around, and obviously there's been a seismic shift in how fantasy gamers view and are talking about this team. In fact, last year, it was a bit tongue-in-cheek, but this year, if you're into fantasy football, they truly are our Bengals, and let's look back and review exactly why this team exploded into the top 10 in total points scored, finishing 7th. They were also 7th in yards per play in total passing yards, 13th in total yards overall. Now, here's the kicker, Ben. This team did all that while only running the 26th most plays, so prolifically efficient in a lot of ways. Some argue it's unsustainable, but others say it won't matter because the play volume will rise. From what you've seen and heard in camp, what should we expect from this offense now that it's been a bit more established? Should we expect more plays? Are we seeing any new wrinkles in scheme, formations, tendencies? What's this offense in 2022 going to look like?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting when you look at the overall rates. Like yards per play is probably one of my favorite stats because it is a differentiator, and it's a great equalizer when you look at, you know, how efficient an offense is. What's interesting, though, is even that can be a little deceiving, especially when you look at this Bengals team. Because last year they feasted on big plays. In 2020, you know, Joe Burrow's first year, that was a team that was very much not able to create those explosive plays. They draft Ja'Marr Chase, Joe Burrow gets healthy, all of a sudden that changes. Now, the flip side of that is is that they were very big play reliant. And that is kind of the unsustainability in that offense when you look at those rates. And when you, it's interesting you pointed out the you know, the numbers and the points that are coming off of a very low play total. It's because you're seeing a lot of those big plays through the air. I think Joe Burrow and the Bengals led the NFL in yards per attempt, which goes to show you how much they were able to get those yards through the air. And then as the season progressed, especially we saw it in the postseason, when teams looked to take away the big plays, the Bengals really struggled. I thought that the Bengals went to the Super Bowl, quite honestly, in spite of their offense. They were very much, during that Super Bowl run, the defense is what enabled them to be so close to winning it all. Had that offense been any better in the championship game, I think that that would have been the differentiator, and quite honestly, it's what should have happened. And I thought the defense played well enough to win the Super Bowl. So for the Bengals, being able to be better in the red zone, being able to finish drives, being able to sustain drives, those are all going to be key factors in this offense. And I think that, you know, looking at how teams defend Ja'Marr Chase will be the key factor, the X factor for fantasy managers in general. Because, you know, if the Bengals are not allowed to get those big plays through the air, get all those plays on go routes, Ja'Marr Chase and go routes were the most productive routes of any receiver in the NFL last year, according to NFL Next Gen. So that is going to be kind of the thing that if that gets taken away, what does that do for the rest of the offense? Are they able to be a little bit more balanced? Are we going to see maybe more passing routes through Joe Mixon? Are we going to see Tyler Boyd's usage increase, T. Higgins' usage increase? What does Hayden Hurst look like in this offense? So all of these things are yet to be determined. But I think if you're the Bengals, you're looking at saying, okay, they're expecting defenses to play more cover two, more two high shells. So how is that going to maybe increase the usage for the other receivers? And that's what's going to make it so interesting from a fantasy perspective.
Yeah, I know that those cover two shells, that's been a pretty effective in stopping Mahomes, if I'm correct. It stands to reason that that's, you know, going to get applied to Burrow and Chase. So very interesting, Ben. We're off to a hot start here. Let's dig a little bit into Joe Burrow. You know, he's the man, Ben. Last year, the big talk was his health. Now it's all about his play. An underdog, the fantasy app, his avatar is him swagged out. Not his team headshot. It's him in glasses and his fur coat. So this guy's got a lot of respect. He's a baller. And he currently goes in the QB 5-8 range in 2021. He threw for just over 4,600 yards and 34 touchdowns. Despite the Bengals being 20th in pass attempts, they were also in the bottom of neutral pass rate for most of the season until the last month when they were more in the middle of the pack, which also coincided with some eruption games for this offense, winning people millions of dollars in DFS. I wish one of those people was me, but it was not.
Joe's recently had an appendectomy, which of course we'll want some insight on. Once he gets over that, should we expect some more pass volume this year that could truly unlock Burrow's ceiling?
Yeah, unfortunately, so far for in the camp, all we've seen out of Burrow is him trying to figure out what he wants to drive, whether it be a scooter or a medical card after he had his appendectomy right before the start of camp. And right now, it's yet to be seen if he's going to practice in camp. You know, by the time y'all listen to this, you know, but he might be back out there because it remains a day-to-day proposition. I don't expect him to play in the first preseason game, and then we'll kind of go from there. But in terms of the passing volume throughout the year, I think that, you know, I it was actually probably lower than I expected given what we saw in 2020 pre-injury. You know, we saw them throw it a ton. I think that also had to do with the Bengals being down in games. So I think it depends on if the Bengals are able to be playing from, you know, from a good position, you may see them try to drain the clock a little bit, maybe play the game situation a little bit more. And if the Bengals are in tight games, they will probably be in, you know, may throw the ball a lot. This year, with the Bengals being getting that first play schedule, you're going to see a lot of competitive games, some very tough games. I think that you could see a higher passing volume, especially later in the year as the schedule gets tougher. You've got Buffalo, you've got Tampa Bay on the back end of that schedule when fantasy managers will be in the postseason. So, you know, this may be a long play for some fantasy managers because you look at the beginning of the schedule. The Bengals should, you know, I think they should be, you know, have a potential to go 4-0 going in and be undefeated going into that first Baltimore game in the regular season. So you may not see a lot of Joe Burrow passing volume, but as the games get more difficult, that passing volume may increase. So I think you may have to kind of hedge your bets there. Obviously, you know, with the big play potential out of this offense, even if Burrow is not throwing the ball a lot, You know, he is going to be somebody who could give you a good amount of touchdowns. That interception rate, he managed that very well, especially toward the back half of the year. It's funny, at the beginning of the season, we're wondering why he was throwing as many interceptions as anybody in the NFL. And I have a hunch that, you know, after he was coming off the knee injury, he worked on adding the velocity. And you know, I think it was him trying to figure out, okay, how aggressive can he be? Can he challenge some of these tight windows, and how tight is too tight? And so now I think he got a very good understanding of that. So I think that touchdown to interception ratio that we saw in the back half of the season will be sustainable. So I think he is going to be a very solid fantasy option. Obviously, you know, outside of the top three or four guys, you know, what is that 5 to 8 range worth on draft day when you're drafting? I think that's going to be the big question mark. But he is going to be a very valuable add. I think a guy that you will be comfortable rostering and you will get very good production out of compared to some of the other guys in that 5 to 8 range. So I think that's someone that you should really feel good about drafting if he's on the board in the right draft slot.
I have seen the cart watch on your Twitter, I realize. Give Ben a follow at Ben_baby. This guy is fantastic. You know, he's giving you the hardcore insights, but also having fun with camp as well. Obviously, the key to keeping Burrow healthy is a good line. The line obviously gets a lot of, you know, flack in all football circles. Burrow was famously sacked 134 times in the playoff game against the Titans. That number might be made up, but it certainly felt that high. But I do feel like they've made adjustments and brought in some new guys to shore it up. How is that line gelling, Ben?
It's so far, it's still hard to get a really good analysis on how good that line is going to be because of injuries. And quite honestly, Lyle Collins still has a practice in camp. He said he nicked his back during the offseason. So hence him being on the PUP, that could change any day now when he feels like he's ready to get some training camp reps in. But, you know, they got him to play right tackle. You got Alex Kappa, who they signed basically the second the tampering window opened, or the negotiation window, opened during free agency, which showed that they knew that that line had to be better. He'll be playing right guard. And then Ted Karras, a very reliable offensive lineman the last few years, will be at center. The big question is what is left guard going to look like? Can Jackson Carman be a sustainable option out there? You know, they expect Jonah Williams to play well at left tackle. He's going to be the only returning starter from last year's offensive line, which tells you everything you need to know about that unit. So I think it's going to take some time for them to kind of find their footing. If they can, you know, maybe get some good reps together as a unit the last couple of weeks of training camp, that could be a good sign. Obviously, having a pretty weak start to the year will help them out. When you look at it, the Miami defense is going to test them a little bit. I think they've got a very strong defense early on in the year. I believe that's a week 3 game, if I'm not mistaken, a Thursday night football game, actually week 4, excuse me. So I think that's going to be probably a tough challenge for them. But by and large, this offensive line should be better than it was the year before. And honestly, I think you would like to see more progression out of Burrow in saying, okay, this is probably, you know, that risk of how long do I hold the ball versus how long do I want to make plays. We saw that in the postseason, a lot of him being pretty aggressive, which led to the good amount of the sacks. So maybe that gets pared down a little bit, but I think at the beginning of the season, we should expect the offensive line to be a lot better. I think it's at the end of the year, you know, how much will those guys hold up? That's going to be the X factor.
Well, something to monitor all month and into the season. Thank you for that, Ben. Next up, you know, we got some fantasy headliners here to talk about in the wide receiver room, the boom boom room, I like to call it here in Cincinnati. Jamar Chase solidified first round pick. He torched that can't catch narrative to the tune of 88 catches, over 1,400 yards and 13 TDs last year on 128 targets. T. Higgins doesn't go long after. He went for 74,000 and 6 TDs in a hot and cold season. I think it's safe to say, barring injury, these guys are both hitting over 1,000 yards receiving again. I mean, that just seems like they would, but it's those ceilings that get drafters' juices flowing. Should drafters temper their expectations a bit, or will Galaxy brains be broken by their production this year, Ben?
I would venture to guess that the production would, for both of that, at the end of the year, will look solid. Now, I think the thing that fantasy managers will have to navigate is that there will be some boom or bust periods for both of those guys, as we saw last year. Because, you know, and here's the question mark is that Ja'Marr Chase obviously is one of the best receivers in the NFL, but the Bengals showed last year they're not going to force it if it's not there. And that will lead to greater production for T. Higgins, because that should free things up for him as well. And Tyler Boyd on that end, I think to a lesser degree, because we saw that even when teams gave Ja'Marr Chase a ton of attention, the guy who benefited the most was T. Higgins. And specifically, if you look through weeks 8 through 14, nearly half of T. Higgins' overall season production came on that end. And what we saw was the teams really weren't respecting Ja'Marr Chase a lot at the beginning of the year. The Bengals openly wondered, hey, when are they going to double team Ja'Marr Chase? You know, they don't seem to be rolling a lot of safety help over the top. So we're just going to keep throwing it to him until teams really want to start playing him that way. And whenever they did, T. Higgins ended up popping off. I think there was a stretch last year where he had three straight 100-yard games. The target share was off the charts. Meanwhile, Ja'Marr Chase, during that same time, I believe between weeks 8 and 14 during the regular season, only had one game of 10 targets or more, if I'm not mistaken. So I believe 10 catches or more for certain. So that tells me that T. Higgins's ADP maybe a little bit lower than what you would want it to be. You know, I think health is going to be the big thing coming off labrum surgery. We still haven't seen him work into team drills, but you know, I think the thing is he played with that injury during that back half of the year and was phenomenal in terms of production value, had a very big game in the Super Bowl, which also goes to show that Ja'Marr Chase didn't have a massive Super Bowl because teams were looking to take him away. And you know, when Los Angeles was keyed in on taking away Chase, Higgins had a very good game, specifically had that big catch for a touchdown at the beginning of the second half. So if I'm a fantasy manager, I look at it and I look at the raw numbers and I go, okay, Ja'Marr Chase had a massive year. But when you really dig into the details, that ADP was really high. And the Bengals, because they have a really good second receiver, they are not going to force the issue into, you know, maybe getting the ball to their wide receiver one. I think when they drafted Higgins as well, they felt like he was a guy who could be a wide receiver one. And I think he definitely can be in that regard. So it's going to be really interesting to see how those guys go off the boards when people are drafting them. I feel like Higgins probably has a greater value than people realize, and Chase, because of that year, maybe overvalued. That's just me personally, because I feel like the Bengals aren't going to be the type of team that's going to force targets to one guy, even though they know that he's that good. So I feel like because you've got all these options, it's going to really create a lot of volatility in target share for this team, which makes it, you know, fantasy managers may have to grit it out some weeks, but then some weeks you're going to see Ja'Marr Chase put up just otherworldly performances like he did against Baltimore, like he did against Kansas City. And those are the kind of games when you're drafting them, those are the ceilings that you're hoping for.
Do you feel like the 128 targets for Chase, is that a good mean? Like he's not going to be like 140, 150 target guy, you know, moving forward, you know, this season and maybe beyond.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. And like I said, I think the overall it should average out, like you said. I think the you know, you're looking for solid mean production, good end of year production. You are going to get that. The weekly fluctuations, though, they may vary significantly. And so that's going to be the one thing you will have to kind of grit your teeth on game days if you're a fantasy manager. But overall, both of those guys should have very good numbers by the end of the year. And I expect kind of the numbers that we saw for Higgins, Chase, and Boyd to be pretty similar, where you're going to see Ja'Marr and Higgins or Ja'Marr and T go over 1,000 yards. Tyler probably a shade under those. I think that's pretty reliable when you look at it. I think that it should play out pretty similarly in 2022.
Well, you mentioned Tyler Boyd. He's kind of the steady Eddie for this team. And like you said, he almost had 1,000 yards himself last year simply by being good and on this offense. Should that continue? It sounds like it. And any other wide receivers popping up at all? You know, this is a very, you know, explosive offense. Maybe Chase is covered. But, you know, there's someone that's standing out that could, you know, suck up some targets and hit pay dirt from Mr. Burrow.
Yeah, you know, I would not draft anybody outside of the top three in those receivers. There is no clear wide receiver four. There's actually a very steep drop off. If one of those guys gets hurt, you know, you're really, I think the Bengals will be struggling to find any level of production out of the line of scrimmage from their guys. You know, right now they've got a lot of undrafted rookies who could potentially slot in at wide receiver four, some veterans in Mike Thomas and Stanley Morgan, who haven't really been given a lot of reps offensively over the last couple of years. So I think there is a lot of hesitation after those top three. But like I said, if defenses do key in on Chase, then, you know, we will see, I think, T. Higgins be the beneficiary of that. And that's why I like his, you know, where he's going to end up being. I feel like whatever his ADP is, I wouldn't be afraid to go a little higher and reach in draft to take T. Higgins because of what he can do, what he can provide. And especially when you look at his frame, his length, he's a guy who can go up and really make contested catches. You know, I think that he is very explosive, built a lot like AJ Green when they got him, a very much a like-for-like replacement. And so it is going to be really fascinating to see how that plays out on draft day. But I think the number one beneficiary, if Chase does get more attention, is going to be T. Higgins.
Well, let's hope our Bengals stay healthy here and we get this this machine to light up our lineups. When we talk about the running back room in Cincinnati, of course, we're talking about Joe Mixon. And when fantasy gurus or analysts, whatever you want to call them, talk about Joe, they think he's good at real life football. But for our fake football team, Ben, he's just not used enough in the past game to get super excited about. Now, if they do throw more or, you know, have to be in these competitive games, could Mixon's usage and therefore his numbers dip, or could he be in the mix more than we think? You know, what have you seen and heard about this so far?
Yeah, you know, we saw last year whenever they split Mixon out a good amount, they enjoyed putting him kind of on that outside receiver position when they went out of empty, which is one of Joe Burrow's preferred formations out of 11 personnel, where you've got three receivers and one tight end and one running back. But I asked Zach Taylor point blank in during OTAs, because I knew fantasy managers wanted to know, is Joe Mixon going to get more targets in the passing game? And Zach Taylor said, essentially, where are those targets going to come from? And so, you know, for those of you looking for more, I mean, he kind of asked it back to me, saying, basically, if you want more targets, where are you going to get those from? We got three wide receivers in Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, Tyler Boyd, who we just talked about here, who are very good. We feel like we've got one of the best receiving rooms in the NFL. So if we are going to give Joe Mixon more targets, that comes at the cost of some of the other guys on the roster. And so that is the issue with Mixon. Now, his touchdown rate was very good. I feel like he had quietly had a very strong year on the ground. His usage rate was one of the highest in the NFL on first and second downs. And I think it's very much, and I talked to a guy on staff about this, when you're looking at it, because trying to gauge, okay, where are those Mixon targets going to come from? You know, are they going to increase his usage on third downs, especially neutral third downs, not rush heavy third downs? Because that doesn't really do fantasy managers any good. You know, if you want to see a Joe Mixon higher third down share, well, if it's third and one, third and two, those are run downs. That's not really going to help you a whole lot. And those 1 or 2 yards aren't going to be good fantasy value, you know, for you. You want him on the field on third and five, third and sixes, third and sevens, where he could potentially get those targets, really third and four and beyond. That's a realistic, you know, down where your back will get a target. I just don't see it because of how much they use him on first and second down. So the real X factor is, can another running back take Joe Mixon's first and second target share? I think if that happens, or down share, if they can take him off the field on first and second downs, it creates the likelihood that you can put him on the field on third downs or more. Realistically, there's really only one guy you would imagine who could take those snaps, and that's Chris Evans, who was a rookie last year and who was a guy who really looked a lot like Giovanni Bernard. And when they drafted him, he got the same number, built the same way. You know, he had a really nice touchdown out of the backfield against Detroit and showed you what he could do vertically in the passing game, who I think could be their best passing option as a running back. But if he's on the field more on first and second down, or even Samaje Perine gets some of those snaps, then you can entertain the idea of Mixon being on the field on third down. So this is a very convoluted formula. There's so many moving parts into it. So long story short, I am still very hesitant that Mixon will get those targets on first and second downs or in the passing game in general, even though he is very proficient because of what he does on the ground, because of how good he is on the ground and how good the rest of the Bengals receivers are. If they didn't have Ja'Marr Chase, they didn't have T. Higgins, they didn't have Tyler Boyd, didn't have Hayden Hurst, quite frankly, I'd feel better about Mixon getting more targets. But because the Bengals have really surrounded Burrow with a lot of good passing options outside of Mixon, it doesn't really make sense to take those targets away and really you put them on the field on third downs in general. And Mixon is so good on first and second downs. It's just, it's a victim of circumstance, I think, when you look at it, because were Joe Mixon on another team that didn't maybe have the receivers as good as the one the Bengals have, he would definitely be using the passing game and he'd be a great option for fantasy managers. I think he'd be a guy who would go off the board really early because he's so good in space. He's so tough to bring down. I mean, I was watching, you know, just tape off the Tennessee Titans game in the divisional round of the playoffs last year. And there was a play where Mixon got the ball out of the backfield and it looked like that might be a 9-yard gain. And there were three guys in there, one guy bounced off and nobody could really bring him down. And, you know, they just had to run him out of bounds because of how physical he is and how much steam he gets going downhill. I mean, it's a very tantalizing prospect to have him in the passing game. But when you look at it, all things considered, I just don't see that target share really increasing.
Showing once again why you're one of the best in the biz here, Ben. I think that really, you know, kind of reframed the Mixon pass catching talk in a good way. I think, you know, a lot of it in the fantasy community, they kind of spin it like, you know, they just don't want to throw to this guy or don't trust him. But I think, you know, what you've laid out makes a lot more sense. And how are things between you and Mr. Mixon, Ben? All good?
I'm sure we're fine. We'll put it that way.
Okay, great. You mentioned Chris Evans already, and I don't want to get too deep into it, but I did see you had a pro Chris Evans tweet the other day for fantasy, and it sounds like, you know, he's surging maybe ahead of P. Ryan. Could you just quickly touch on that?
So Zach Taylor actually said that it was the other way around, that P. Ryan was still going to be kind of their running back too. Really a guy they like in pass protection a lot. So he will be on the field on third downs. But when you looked at kind of the route distribution, the target distribution, there wasn't a massive difference between Mixon and P. Ryan. So what that tells us is that even though P. Ryan was on the field on third downs, primarily he was in there for pass protection. Very rarely are we, I mean, the shares in their routes and in their targets, I don't think are substantial enough that we're going to see a lot of Samaje Perine getting the ball when he's on the field on third down. If he's on the field, it's going to be primarily as a pass protector. Now, Chris Evans, I think is going to be, you know, Zach Taylor talked about, well, you know, Perine is going to be the number two, but that's what training camp is for. He's a guy who could, you know, potentially, you know, Chris Evans, if he has a good camp, he's a guy who maybe solidifies himself a little bit more in the kick return game, especially if Brandon Wilson isn't healthy. He'll be a guy that they have to, you know, keep on the active on game days, and he will be someone that you need to find some usage for him. And when you look at the yards per, I guess the route depth on, you know, when they're targeted, Chris Evans is the only guy who is really substantial. Everybody else basically are getting checkdowns, whereas Chris Evans, you know, he is a little bit past the line of scrimmage on his target. So that tells me that vertically, he's a guy who is a legitimate passing option when he's on the field. We saw that, like I said, he had a phenomenal catch for a touchdown against Detroit last year. Fantasy managers, go and look it up. He's a guy who kind of looked like a wheel route, and he extended and you know, looked like a ball that was a little overthrown, and he was able to make that play. And that shows you that he has the capability to do that. So he's a guy who is very solid. I think that if I was going to draft another running back and take a flyer late, I would draft Evans over Perine because of this passing usage.
Yeah, I had to double check here, but I believe he had over 10 yards per catch last season in a small sample size. But Evans kind of a my guy for me. Might be on one of my teams already. Well, let's round to the finish though, Ben. In the tight end room, you know, this room remains the least sexiest for fantasy gamers on this team. CJ Uzomah went to the Jets, but in comes Hayden Hurst, as you mentioned, who seems like a really great guy, but not a great fantasy producer really in college or in the pros. What do you think of the chances of the Bengals having a fantasy relevant tight end?
I kind of like them, to be quite honest. I think you can, I think out of, it won't be in traditional usage that you see. I think chunk plays will be where Hayden can really, really make his value. So if you're in a PPR league, you know, it may still may be a hesitant play, but when you look at it, that's another guy who can stretch the field vertically. And especially if you're going to play, if you're going to see a lot of cover two looks, and they're in teams and safeties are really going to try to take away the boundaries, and really, especially on those go routes for Higgins and Chase, I can see scenarios where Hayden Hurst is really able to go up the seam and kind of split that zone coverage and really, really be, you know, a viable option and create some big plays in the, in that range. And I think he's definitely a more fluid guy, a more, a better passing option than CJ Uzomah was for the Bengals. I think Uzomah did a lot of good things, did a lot of dirty work. He was a guy who was really tough to bring down when he got the ball, and was a very valuable and probably underrated part of this offense, which is why the Jets paid him what they paid him in free agency. But I think that from a fantasy standpoint, I am very curious to see if Hayden, because of just the way he's built, the way he moves and the usage that he could provide to this offense, I think it could be very sneaky. Now, the question is, it's the same problem we have with Mixon, is that who's, you know, how many targets can you realistically get for you to feel like, okay, this is a guy we want? I mean, the Bengals play a lot of 11 personnel, which means there's only going to be one tight end on the field, which means he will be on the field, you know, more than other tight ends in the league. The issue is, because it's not a offense predicated around a lot of tight end routes, you're maybe not going to get as many targets. So that's the problem with him. I think that being said, there could be an opportunity for more explosive plays, for more vertical routes for Hurst, especially down the seams, and basically maybe keep those, you know, teams defending the hashes a little bit more, you know, defending up and down the middle of the field a little bit more and keeping defenses honest, so it does open up the sidelines for Higgins and Chase to kind of run rampant and do what they do best. So that is a very intriguing option. I'm very curious to see what Hurst is going to look like. And I wouldn't be, if there are really no other good tight ends on the board and you feel good about receiver, I would feel okay in the later rounds taking a flyer on Hayden Hurst because of the upside that he could provide.
Well, we are bullish on Hayden Hurst. That's great to hear. A lot of people are in underdog slow drafts right now, probably deep in the draft, and they're about to smash draft on Hayden Hurst. Thank you, Ben. We got one last question, but it's a bit of a toughie. What's your hottest or boldest? Let's say boldest. Boldest fantasy take for the Bengals in 2022.
Oh, that is a good one, because it's so tough. I feel it's like evaluating stocks, a speculation. You just feel like you're just going to get burned in a fantasy take. But I do think that this year, I think T. Higgins probably will be the underrated. I think his ADP will be better than Jamar Chase's ADP, if that makes sense, in terms of value. Like I said earlier, I think that Jamar Chase will go higher. He will be productive, but because of a lot of people thinking he is one of the best receivers in the league, and I think he is one of the best receivers in the league, I think you're going to see him fly off the board early, and T. Higgins may be around a little bit later. And because he's kind of in that Jamar Chase shadow, a lot of people may not really realize how good Higgins can be. But we saw last year that whenever teams gave Jamar a ton of attention, T. Higgins ate. Like, he was a guy that I drafted for that reason. And at the end of the year, it really played out really well. Now, granted, at the beginning of the year, it kind of hurt me not drafting Jamar while he was on the board, taking T. Higgins instead, kind of being the galaxy brain guy that did not bode all that well for me at the beginning of the year. But at the end, when defenses finally realized Jamar Chase was good, T. Higgins, you know, did really well. So I think T. Higgins will actually have a very, very good fantasy year. A guy who might be worthy of, I don't think you should drop any later than the second round. I think that if you need a receiver, he's on the board, go ahead and take him. And rostering both of those guys, honestly, I would, if you can get Jamar Chase in the first round and T. Higgins in the second round, I would do that instantly. You're getting 2,000 yard receivers, not many offenses around the NFL. You know, maybe the Chargers or one that can put them up. We'll see in Buffalo if that combination of Diggs and Gabriel Davis maybe is a sneaky one that can put up 1,000 yards as well. But I think that it's going to be very fascinating to see. And I like the idea of stacking, you know, in a very, now when you have offenses that are built to throw the ball a lot, I don't find any hesitation in stacking, you know, receivers and saying, okay, because you know both those guys are going to be 1,000-yard receivers. You know that offenses are going to throw the ball a lot. So, you know, I think that T. Higgins might be one of the best fantasy steals for anybody in drafts this year.
Ben, this has been amazing. I mean, right now you are royalty in many circles. So thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me. I mean, this was incredible. He's at Ben_baby. He works for ESPN. You might have heard of that little outfit. Go to ESPN.com, read his work, give him a follow. Ben, real quick, anything you're listening to? We always talk a little music. Anything on your playlist?
You know, I've been digging into house music a good amount. That's kind of what, because I've been running a lot more. And so as much as I love Texas country, it's really hard to run to it. So one of my favorite DJs right now out of the UK, Joel Corey, he's been on a lot of good collabs. I think that there's been a lot of good, you know, it's been interesting to watch a shift in pop music really over the last 12 months. We saw this really with Beyonce's album when she just came out, kind of the amount of house electronic influences that's really dominating the pop charts. It's been really fascinating to watch, but you know, off the top of my head, I think that, you know, basically right now, whatever's on that kind of mid playlist on Spotify, it's really been dominating what I've liked. You know, I will say I did give you the Turnpike Troubadours rec. I believe that it's turned out pretty well. I do like Charlie Crockett. I do. He's a guy very much. It's an older sound, a very good sound. I like him. And the Vandaliers, I believe they've been touring with Turnpike, and I've gotten into them. Someone described them as a cross between kind of bluegrass and like Irish, the Flogging Mollies to a degree, or the Dropkick Murphys mixed with the country twinge. It's been very interesting. I kind of like the Vandaliers a lot. It's a very interesting sound. I would check them out. Both of those bands, I think, are very good. So right now I'm across all spectrums, just trying to get in what I can, especially when I'm not taking in good podcasts that are going to get me ready for the NFL season.
I absolutely love it. We will all check that out. And thank you once again, and have a great season.
Thanks so much. I appreciate you having me on. It's always, always a pleasure.
T. Higgins, Smash Season. You are now dialed in.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.